Welcome to the second talk in this session, Science and Creation, Science and Technology Working with Creation. Today we've got David Campbell. He's going to speak on Terrae Humanum et Machinarum Est, Afraid of Bad Big Death. And David, where are you from?
So Gardner-Webb University in North Carolina.
Well, everyone, round of applause for David here.
Thank you. Previous talk nicely talked about some of the philosophical issues. I'm looking much more at just the practical level. I'm not sure I want to be combined with the computer when the computer doesn't work so well. Computer this technology is great when it works how I want it to, but then often there are things that I don't really want. Good old Clippy and Bayesian doesn't always work. Computers do what they're told to, which isn't necessarily what's a good idea. And in particular, since I work in taxonomy and systematics and care a lot of major biodiversity databases, and these make it quite easy to do a wide variety of types of analyses. And you can do those without checking if the data are any good behind it. Good old garbage in, garbage out is a problem. What are these databases? What are they trying to be? That needs to be defined. Is the information accurate? How do we fix it? What accountability is there? What sort of support do we have? Is this database trying to just compile everything it gets a hold of and critically and user figures out what if it's good, or are they actually trying to correct and update the information? That's something that's not always clear. Do they consider this a work in progress, or do they think it's pretty complete? Whatever they're doing, even if it's just grab what they can, you need expertise to prevent new errors and also to know where to look for the information. For example, I was working on a group of snails and started seeing references to a genus Inns supposedly in this group and couldn't find this. What we got from some other database. Eventually, it turned out that it was from a typo where they only got the last syllable of the genus. Here's an example. Major database lists class gastropoda snails. Polygyridae, like this one here, and that's listed at the same level as the subclasses of the snails. Does this mean that Polygyridae actually goes all the way back, diverging at the same level subclasses, or does this mean that the person who entered Polygyridae only knew it was a snail, didn't know anything else, so just stuck it in gastropoda, and it's at the bottom? Well, the output that you get from the database, if you run an analysis, assumes it really belongs there. It does not. It is well within subclasses, but it was just an example of ignorance. Other examples of data quality. Looking at a particular snail, and location was listed as latitude 0, longitude 0. Particularly given that it's not found off the coast of Africa. Another example, trying to figure out this record of an Indo-Pacific snail in the Caribbean region and eventually track down the original. It said their uncertainty was 999999, which looks like they filled in the whole space with nines. Actually, the uncertainty should have been more like 15 million meters, because it was about opposite where it should be on the globe. Is the information up to date? Data may be transcribed from older publications and labels. Now, it's worth capturing the data, but being aware that it's old. Sometimes even newer publications copy an older source. 2005, major publication on a group of mollusks. They updated all the classification of living ones, and they got their list of fossils largely from the previous revision of the whole group from the late 1800s. So even though paper publication dates 2005, a good chunk of that data is actually as of late 1800s. Is the person entering the data actually somebody will realize there's something wrong with it? This is an example from the collection currently at the Anthropological Research Institution, a collection that was bought by the original Cornell for Cornell University. And I was trying to figure out what this thing was and eventually realized that instead of Lunica, that was supposed to be Lucida, and rather than hetero. So took a little work there. One thing that's really good at confusing computers is when more than one thing has the same name. Sometimes this is an accidental problem to be fixed in official nomenclature. For example, in 1910, some Mexican workers named a mitrid-type snail after Dahl, Mitridali, and not realizing this, 9 years later, a couple of U.S. workers named another species here on the right, Dahli. Well, the second name, we have to replace it since it's a duplicate, but looked online and the U.S. one, the map has dots in Mexico, and the Mexican one, the map has dots in the U.S. Systems have confused it. Now, if you have the same name for a plant and animal, those are separate codes. That's legal. You keep that. So a fig, familiar for eating, trying to crunch into this fossil shell, even though it's also ficus, would not taste the same. You need a calcium supplement. computers are likely to mix those up. Likewise, Trochoidea is both a genus in gastropods and a quite different superfamily of gastropods. Decapoda is used for squid with 10 arms and crabs with 10 legs. Misspellings give you more opportunities to have matching confusing names. This snail here is Corynifex from the northwestern U.S., but people have misspelled it Carnifex. Carnifex is actually, well, the first uses was for a bird, which already been named. It was also used for another bird, Anacrea, as actually both duplicate names. If you did look, however, and you come up with a monster in some online games, a death metal band, and a Civil War site, there are also a number of species, Carnivex, and there's also a kind of looks a bit like a dinosaur, but isn't Triassic reptilus Carnivex. Carnivex is Latin for butcher, which accounts for most of those uses. Another example, some clams just working on. Midlis impressatus is a name, one of them being in the area that I work on and trying to figure out what's going on with other usages. Means the puzzle. And five different people in the first half of the 1800s all had a puzzle that stick and decided that would be a good name for it. working in a few different languages on two continents. The last one then noticed that there were previous usages and fixed it a little bit. Here's another example. Here's a graph. This is from the things that Timothy gave his talk on the other day. And then that's online as a picture of the snail Gravis. Obviously, it's not a snail, it's a lichen. It is Gravis. The website seems to have made a correction. Now it calls the snails lichens. Another challenge is names that have been used excessively broadly. Not surprisingly, Linnaeus his idea of what was a genus is typically a lot broader than we use today. And this is especially common in fossils where somebody's named a modern thing and then, well, this fossil is at least sort of
like that, and has had the same name applied to it. One example that has been worked on, crocodiles. Okay, here's a fossil crocodilian of some sort. We'll call it crocodiles. Well, it may not actually be a lot close to the true modern restricted group of crocodiles. This tends to particularly not be good if you search for the oldest known example of this group. Often that is actually a less than appropriate use of name. For example, Helix historically, pretty much if it was a snail living on land, it might have called it. It's called Helix. Also, the signs of use to do something, they're not always that good at it. Optical character recognition, taking a text and trying to scan through and find letters. And that technology, in my experience, needs more work. Here's an example, page out of older publication, and you can kind of see them zoom in over on the side. Yes, there are a number of names there. Zoom in again, and optical character recognition came up with whatever that is. And in turn, that leads to saying there's no scientific name for the page, and there are a bunch of them. Another example, Google went through a massive effort of scanning possible libraries. Putting a little more effort into the quality of scans might have been a good thing. Even when the scan itself had been good, the automated processing sometimes left something to desire. These are two pictures from the same page in a book on fossil shells in Paris area. This one, it actually retained the quality of the original scan, but the left one, and most correctly, it decided this should be transformed into black and white line drawing when no of this photographs. So a lot of the pictures are really useless in the Google scan version. And that's the directions of the computer. One way of trying to get a lot more data in is crowdsourcing. It's a good way of public outreach, getting people involved. There are lots of popular apps and things like that for people to enter data. Say what types of plants and animals you see as you're out and around. But spawn can be a concern. For example, eBird is a major app for reporting what birds you see when you go out. And they decided they had to specifically put out a warning to everyone. If you use an automated, what's that bird identification app, they'll just automatically put whatever that says for what was there. Think a moment, is that something that actually lives where you are? You using the sound analysis, did it actually sound like that, or was it kind of a bunch of noise and it picked up on something random? Don't just hear things not really knowing what you're doing. Another challenge, accountability, with aggregation, is the source or the bigger aggregate responsible for dealing with errors. All too often, try to fix something, and oh, go, it must be from the source. How would it be added so I could click and it automatically contact the source? That would be a lot more convenient. Also, that could allow automatic linking of the particular entry with the error report, rather than having to say, this entry had this number, what is that one you need? Another thing is, does the database actually check for common errors? For example, work with fossils, paleobiology database, measure one there, and okay, it reports the range, but if the reported range is, we have a bunch of them that are 400 million years old and a bunch that are 200 million years old and nothing in between, it's Tom's probably wrong. There are things like that that seem obvious to me, and might help it mark built in as a red flag. Okay, here's your point. Who's the dealer? Sometimes it's the bringing together that led to a problem. For example, in the logistics office realm, Kiyosuke Smith, 1870, is a European Jurassic Western. Name's been changed since then. But there's an online map of where it's been found. That's not Europe, and for that matter, it's not Jurassic either. That is confusing Kiyosuke humans, 1858, with the Smith 1871. So, just technology doesn't really solve the problems all by itself. You do need to draw in appropriate human expertise. And in that expertise, folks have to have the training and some support. You can't expect somebody just to be on the screen entering data, even if they had good signal, they eventually start. giving credit for the data generation and checking can be a challenge. This is one example, more broadly. You can think, how well are we valuing everyone and their work? We think a lot about, say, ethnic diversity, but we also have quite a diversity of, yes, different people doing different things. Are we valuing all aspects there? Likewise, is our appreciation of the biological diversity around us accurate? How good is our information? Are we doing good work? The original Peter's human line, I suppose it goes back to Seneca, which went on from Peter's human to persistent error, is diabolical. They all appear as not doing better. They all persist in an error. That's what you all do. thanks. Very good. Thanks for the support. If he gave us the photos, at least the good ones there. and have a few additional references in here. So thank you.
About 6 or 7 minutes for any questions for David.
Okay, I'll confess I was just sitting here because I went the previous one went to the next one, but you have put language to one of my frustrations with just a lot of crowdsourced things on the internet and the big databases and such, so I appreciate that. Thank you. I wish I would have had a snappy finger solution, but at least it is that because one of the things I noticed in your presentation is the effect of what I would call compound errors. So you take like a historical thing and then it just sort of gets either repeated or reiterated or built upon, and then that error just kind of almost multiplies to some degree until it's corrected or never corrected. And I know you're looking at a particular area in your expertise, but the lesson you're actually telling us, I feel like, I mean, do you feel like the lesson you're kind of telling us is much has much more broader implications as far as just data, I mean, even like historical data?
The compilation of this sort, you do need people who know what you're doing, checking and looking for obvious errors. You know? Of course, there's some things that may be much more difficult to track down, but there are some things that are pretty obvious, and you do get challenges as the information comes along, as it's being treated as the authority, and it's not too good. There's not going to be a real obvious automatic, here's what we should do. example, the majority, you do have things where occasionally, well, figure out these are multiple spellings for the same thing, which is the right one, at least in the case of scientific names, and the majority often is not correct. One of the quirks of scientific names, given that it's based on Latin, is that typically the species name is an adjective and has to be re-engendered with the genus name. Typically. But a species name can also be a noun, an acquisition, and nouns not change with the genus. A snail, widespread in South America, carries nasty parasites, is Gamma Viator. Viator is a male predator. Well, it was originally described in a male misspelling of the genus, got transferred to a female spelling, and, well, if it's a female genus, somebody decided to be a female traveler and made it by a trix, rather by a door. And that's the spelling that you find more, but it's incorrect. So these things often take some traction down. You can't just say, oh, more people say this, go with it.
Could we propose something sort of like the IUPAC system with naming chemicals? Exemplify it more in this context? How, like, a standardized naming system so that this sort of eliminates confusion across different languages or across different databases?
Further standardization, there is some potential for that. I mean, there are a lot of efforts, but I haven't personally gotten into that enough, but my impression is that kind of got, here's a great standard. Here's a great standard. You kind of have multiple ones out there. Coordinating is a problem. The other big thing is, a lot of this will be great for me to be able to analyze, but not necessarily great for the person that needs to input the data in the first place. There hasn't been as much attention to standardizing and in a way that is convenient for the person at that end of the process.
Just a comment, really complimenting what he says. Here he's dealing with just shells and genus and species names. I've been in other industries for a career, and we have all different kinds of data down in well, down into wells, lots of kinds of data, and data is across bases. So it is a massive, you know, take this example and put probably exponent of 10 or 100 on top of that is the complexity that the energy industry has to deal with.
You know, one of the, I think you mentioned common errors. One that may be a little closer to home, those of us or family members who are not in scientific areas that use a lot of data like that. Ancestry.com, FamilySearch.org, where you're researching family trees, and because you see a majority of family trees that are saying one thing, but it's just compounding an error. And if you take a closer look and you validate it from various multiple sources, you realize that entire tree is really should be separate from it. Really should be separate. So, question?
Yeah, so I'm most familiar with eBird, and they actually have a group of people who review that data. So the Cornell Lab of Ornithology runs eBird and the Merlin app, and we're very aware of, especially when they added song identification to the Merlin app, they got all sorts of incorrect identifications. So, like, if I report a non-migratory species from South Florida from a location in Nashville where I'm from, I get an email or a call from one of those reviewers. So those guys act kind of as gatekeepers for that data set. It's not perfect, but they're trying to do something about it. Who are the gatekeepers for some of the data sets that you're working for? Or is it just like brute force guys like you or your son? Like, going through the historical data and trying to figure that out.
Some of them do have more worms, for example, is another one, as well as with Ebert and Fabio described. Worms does a good job. They have people assigned for each taxonomic group, World Register of Marine Species, and can do a very good job of sending emails saying, does it look right? Please don't give an email back. Things we fix it, or, well, actually, here's this other paper that is why we do it this way. So there are some that have more, but a lot of these, there are others where I found, got the DNA that and looked up the original record, and that picture is not what you got the DNA from, which matched the name there. So I sent them an email and got a reply back. He did not provide the correct identification number, so we can't hear anything about it. Well, which is the correct identification number? I emailed back. There are all the numbers in your record. You got a problem here. I didn't hear back, but it didn't eventually fix it. But there are others where it's kind of actually finding anywhere to report something is difficult, and things just seem to vanish if there is sort of report. So not all these really have a clearly defined reporting error check system.
Does that happen pre, like, publication, or is it usually post-publication when other people that are working on that assemblage species sees it and is like, no, that's not right, but it's already been published?
There's a mix. Some things do get where they can be looked at a bit before publication. I have seen a few things where publication has had retractions in there that there's a correction to this type of thing. But a lot of these are kind of out there on their own, almost the virtual publication of themselves.
Yeah. Great. Thank you very much, David.